Welcome back for another deep dive. This time, we're looking at a case that could have a huge impact on financial services, all thanks to some counterfeit Gucci handbags.
Yeah, it's amazing how these like seemingly ordinary fake luxury items can bring up these seriously complex legal issues.
Right. So in this case, Gucci America, Inc. v. Frontline Processing Corp., Gucci went beyond the usual suspects, you know, the counterfeiters themselves. They decided to go after the payment processors who actually helped those sales go through. Their argument. Companies like Durango Merchant Services, Frontline Processing Corp., and even a bank, Wood Forest National Bank, were enablers, basically. They provided the services the counterfeiters needed to, well, make money.
And what's super interesting here is this legal concept they're using, contributory trademark infringement. You can think about it like this. If you know your friend is going to use your car to rob a bank and you let them do it, you can't just say, hey, I wasn't involved. The court's applying that same logic to the online world.
I like that analogy. So yeah. Gucci had to prove these companies weren't just bystanders. They were actively involved in this whole scheme.
Exactly. And there's a legal test for that. It comes from a case called Inwood Laboratories v. Ives Laboratories. There are two key parts. Did the company intentionally try to get people to infringe on trademarks? Like, did they encourage it? And second, did they keep providing services even after they knew or should have known that infringement was happening?
Okay, so let's unpack that, starting with Durango Merchant Services. What did they do that was so suspicious?
Imagine this. You go to a website, right? And it's just straight up advertising services to businesses selling replica products. That's Durango. They made it so obvious who they were targeting. The court saw this as a clear-cut case of inducement.
Wow. They weren't even trying to be subtle about it. So that's the first part of the test. But what about the second part? Did Frontline and Wood Forest know about the infringement and just keep doing business anyway?
The court said, yep, they did. There was evidence that both companies kept processing payments for these counterfeiters even after getting obvious warning signs, things like chargebacks, customer complaints, everything pointed to something shady going on.
So it's more than just looking the other way. It's actively enabling the infringement by keeping those essential services flowing even with all those red flags.
Exactly. The court focused on this idea of control. These companies might not have been handling the fake goods themselves, but they had a lot of control over the situation by providing the financial system that let it all happen.
Like they were providing the getaway car for the crime.
Right. The court even compared it to a landlord renting out a space to someone they know is selling counterfeits. You just can't claim you didn't know when you're directly supporting illegal activity, whether it's a physical location or a way to handle the money.
This is starting to feel less about designer handbags and more about how responsibility is changing in this digital age.
That's a good point. To really understand how big this ruling is, we have to compare it to another case where service providers weren't held liable. Perfect 10, Inc. v. Visa Intel Service Azen.
Okay, I'm all ears. Let's get into that comparison.
In Perfect 10, they sued credit card companies because they were showing infringing images. But the court decided that just showing those pictures wasn't enough to make them liable for contributory infringement.
So what's the big difference between that and the Gucci case? Why did the credit card companies get off easy in Perfect 10, but the payment processors got nailed in Gucci v. Frontline?
It all comes down to what the service is and how it connects to the infringement. In Gucci, the payment processing was crucial to selling those fake goods. I mean, without it, the whole thing falls apart, right? It's a way more direct form of support.
Okay, so in Perfect 10, the credit card companies weren't directly making those sales of illegal content happen the same way the payment processors were with the fake goods.
Exactly. Showing a picture online is totally different from handling the actual money that makes the sale happen.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, you know, where does this leave all the other players online? We have web hosts, those companies that ship stuff, even social media. Could they be held liable for contributory infringement too?
That's the big question, isn't it? And the answer is, well, it depends. What Gucci v. Frontline really shows us is that companies can't just sit back and ignore what's happening on their platforms. They have to know who they're doing business with. And if they ignore those red flags, it might look like they're intentionally being blind to what's going on.
So they can't just offer a service and cross their fingers. They've got to be proactive, check out their clients, watch for anything fishy happening.
Absolutely. The court's message is clear. You have power, you have responsibility.
It definitely raises the stakes for everyone online. Sounds like a wake-up call for e-commerce as a whole.
You could say that. And there's another layer here, which is jurisdiction.
Oh, right. Like, if your company is in California, but they helped someone infringe on a trademark in New York, they can get sued there.
Exactly. Gucci v. Frontline made it very clear that if your business operates nationally, you're basically opening yourself up to the jurisdiction of places like New York.
Wow. So companies need to be thinking much bigger about the legal side of what they do.
It's a new world of accountability online, and the risks are higher than ever.
This has been really eye-opening. But I have to say, it's a lot to process. Before we move on to what this means for people shopping online and the future of e-commerce, I think we all need a minute to digest this. What are some of the big takeaways that stand out to you? Phew. Okay. I think I'm finally caught up after all that talk about legal cases and the online world.
Yeah, there's a lot to take in, for sure. But I think the main point is that companies can't just sit back anymore. They've got to be proactive, understand the risks that come with their services, and put things in place to stop people from using their platforms for illegal stuff.
Right. It's about balancing innovation with responsibility.
Exactly. And finding that balance is getting trickier and trickier online, where things happen so fast and it doesn't even matter where you are in the world.
Speaking of responsibility, what about us shoppers? Should we be worried about all these counterfeit goods or whether these service providers could get in trouble?
It's not so much about worry, I think. It's more about being aware. This case shows how important it is to be a smart shopper. You know, do your research before you buy anything. Check those seller ratings. Make sure you're using a secure way to pay. It's always good to be careful, especially when you're buying expensive brands or anything that's often faked.
So this decision might actually be a good thing for shoppers.
It could be. If it makes everyone in e-commerce more careful and accountable, it could make things safer and more trustworthy for everybody.
That's a good point I hadn't thought of. But it also makes you wonder what's next.
This case is just the beginning. It opens up a whole new world of intellectual property law, and it'll be really interesting to see how it all plays out in the next few years.
I have one last question for you and for everyone listening, too. If we're talking about holding service providers accountable for helping with infringement, like those payment processors and web hosts, could it go even further?
That's what's so fascinating here. The possibilities are huge. Think about it. Could social media platforms be held responsible for fake products being advertised or sold on their sites? What about delivery companies that ship those products? It's getting harder and harder to tell the difference between making something easier and actually taking part in something illegal.
Those are some big questions, for sure. It feels like we're just starting to figure out what this contributory liability thing really means in the digital world.
It's complicated, no doubt, and there are no easy answers. But the discussion is happening, and it's one we all need to be a part of as we navigate this ever-changing online landscape.
Well said. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into contributory trademark infringement and how it affects financial services and beyond. We hope you learned something and that it got you thinking.
And until next time, stay curious and keep exploring the legal side of the digital world. It's always changing.